Welcome to another episode of Exploring Curiosity. Today we will be chatting with a voiceover artist to uncover the secrets and the behind the scenes of creating a voiceover and so much more. Today I have Jessica with me on the show. Jessica is a voiceover artist who's produced voiceovers for topmost companies like Volkswagen, USAA, Hyundai, and Johnson & Johnson. She has also recently played the part of the main character's sister, Rose, in a video game, which is Peyton Lost Haven. Make sure you like the video and subscribe to the channel for more such content like this. And now let's jump into the episode. Hi, Jessica. Welcome to the channel. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. How are you?
I'm fine as well. So, Jessica, you've been producing voiceovers. You've produced nearly 2,000 voiceovers for some of the topmost companies in the world. Which has been the most memorable voiceover that you've created?
I'd say it's the one that I did for Volkswagen and Audi. How awesome it was going to turn out. I didn't realize how awesome it was going to turn out. They did some stuff to my voice and put it on top of an amazing video. I was like, and they just told me exactly what they wanted. And so I delivered it to them and I had no idea what they were actually going to do. And so I always remember how, you know, the people who purchase the voiceover can do whatever they want to my voice. Because I'm just giving you the base thing. You can put whatever filters, whatever stuff, which they did. They put like a synthesizer type thing. Made me sound kind of like an AI kind of sound. Mm-hmm. And it was really, really nice. I was like, man, that's pretty great. So I always remember that one.
Okay, so what was it for?
It was for their summit. For 2023, it was for their conference summit. It was for the intro to the conference. And I got permission to share that and use it for my portfolio because I was like, that sounds awesome.
Yeah. So. Okay. So you mentioned they were very specific with what they were expecting from you. So yes. What do you think a client must know before sending a script for a voiceover?
One, they need to know what emotion they're trying to evoke in the people that are watching the video or listening to the voiceover. They need to know what emotion. Because if you can tell me what emotion you're looking for to evoke in people, I can deliver exactly that. But I get a lot of people that come in and say, well, I want casual and conversational. Thing is that there's so many different factors of casual conversational. I mean, I can give you like children's toy. I can give you, you know, versus, you know, mom talking to another mom. Those are way different versions of casual conversational. So if you tell me this is the tone of the video, here's the music, this is the emotion I'm looking to evoke within them. I want them to feel comfortable with their mother, you know, something like that. If they say that, then I can deliver it the way that they're actually looking for. It helps a lot with the concern that you don't know what you want. It helps a lot with that. If you tell me what emotion, I'm going to give it to you.
So what I understand is there are different categories of voiceovers that you must be performing. There are scripts for commercials or, you know, explainer kind of videos like the one you did for the summit. And then there are these character strips. So how do you understand the tone? Which kind of tone is best for what kind of a voiceover? The script that they're providing.
You know, I try to read it to myself. I read it to myself and like, what do I want to hear when I'm watching this? What voice do I want to hear? Because like if they're just saying, well, we want it in a corporate manner. Okay, but that's leaving a lot of it up to me because it's still corporate. There's really serious dry corporate. There's you know, pretty friendly corporate. There's multiple different ways, and a lot of times they don't clarify. Sometimes they just don't really care. But so when I'm reading through a script, I'm reading it to myself going, okay, how do I think this needs to sound? If the person who's purchasing the voiceover sends over like the music, if there's going to be music on it or something like that. Because music is emotion, right?
Exactly.
It provides that emotional background. If you send me over the music, I know exactly what you're looking for. And I'm going to do something that complements that. It's very, very helpful for you to either provide either the video or the music that you're going to use because it tells me exactly the emotion that you're looking at. It's like the English language doesn't really express the emotions very well sometimes. You know, they're just like, well, I want this, this, that. And you end up sending a paragraph of what you want them to feel because the English language doesn't know. But you send me music, I know what you're looking for. So because music is kind of universal. So it really is helpful, especially since I'm working with people who natively don't speak English a lot. And so I know that that's a struggle. And so it's like they don't know how to express it through the English language. And I'm just like, just send me the music and I'll know what you want. So that's one of the biggest pieces that I like. I like to see the video. I like to see, you know, if you're going to send me something where I need to time my voiceover, the video that I need to time and everything, I can time it on my own, or you can time it and tell me at this point I want this to start there. This point I want this, or you can have me just do it based on how I feel it would go with the video, and then I blend it all together and send it.
Okay, so when you read a script, how do you approach the sentiment that must be evoked in the voiceover?
How do I approach the sentiment, the emotions? Is that what you're asking?
Yes, the emotion. Yeah. So, like, if it's a friendly tone, how do you portray a friendly tone? Or if it's a persuasive tone, how do you do that?
They will send over, you know, example voiceovers, you know, sample ones, which I'm really good at emulating different types. So if you send me one, I'm going to emulate that. But sometimes people realize still that they don't actually want that because my voice is different than the one that's in the sample. So, but what I do is, so they're like, oh, okay, I want casual, friendly voiceover for this software, this SaaS software, let's just say, this SaaS software. Okay, great. So I'm going to come at it kind of like somebody who's a layman, someone who I'm talking to somebody who doesn't really know what it is, keeping it simple and easy, as long as the script is simple and easy. So, because if the script is super technical, then I'm going to come at it in a more authoritative friendly versus a casual friendly. So it really just depends on the script too, because the copy that they send me really matters. It really does matter. I've seen many cases where the copy was not great and it didn't match the tone they wanted. And I'm just like, so I deliver what they want. And they're like, yeah, we didn't really like that. And I'm like, I think we need to try something else. You know, and so I'll offer something else and I'll see what they can do. Good copy is incredible. When you have good copy, it makes everything magic. And so that's where if you are not trained in how to do copy or something like that or whatnot, you know, go through one of those freelancer platforms and get one of those copywriters. Say, I've got this product, I want to do this, this, and this, and they can write some beautiful copy, and then you send it over to the voiceover, and you've got an award-winning commercial, you know, or money-making commercial at least, you know.
Makes sense, totally. Okay, so what do you think a company should know before they hire a voiceover artist for their commercial?
Okay, in the voiceover artist, what you're looking for is somebody who's easy to work with. You want someone with a bit of credibility, sure. The nice thing with these platforms, these freelancer platforms, is that it shows your credibility. It shows that you've done work and everything. And you can see the reviews of what other people have left and whatnot. And you can see if there's going to be potentially any problems with communication. You want someone that communicates as much as possible, not someone who just says okay and delivers a voiceover and you're just like, well, that didn't help me. You want someone who communicates. You want someone who's open to constructive feedback, open to constructive feedback, and willing to re-deliver things. Because the thing is, the vast majority of the times people come back and say, okay, this part right here was a little too fast, I need to go a little bit slower right here because we want to emphasize that. And that's a good piece about that copy, too, is knowing where you want the emphasis. If you want to manage it, manage it and just tell me. That way I can deliver it up front. Save everybody some time. I'm all about efficiency. But the work with somebody who's open to that constructive feedback, you know, respectful interaction with each other, because there's some people that will not take feedback very well. And they get offended. You know, that, and you don't want to really work with somebody like that. Even though their voice may be amazing, you know. Their voice may be amazing, but if they're hard to work with, it's may not be worth your time.
You've been recording multiple voiceovers all these years. So how do you ensure there is consistency in the sound quality across multiple recordings?
Well, I have a treated room, a treated room for my sound. That way you don't hear echoes, you don't hear, you know, anything like that. So everything is really consistent. I try to keep it all the same. That way then you don't have sudden new things going on. With software, I mean, because I use like Adobe Audition, and I have a stack that I use, a stack of effects that I use that are all the same. All the same. So it always sounds the same. The voice that goes in is the same. The surrounding area is the same. And my software is the same as far as how it's processed. If there's something different going on, like say, for example, a car goes by in the middle of my reading or something like that, because I don't have my room soundproofed, but I have it treated for echo and reverb and that kind of stuff. If that happens, and of course, a lot of times I'm re-recording because I want to go back to that same, I want to go back to that same steady delivery of quality.
Makes sense. Also, you mentioned soundproofing and sound treating. So can you explain the difference between both of these? And also, you know, how can you treat your room well enough so that there's best quality audio that you capture?
Well, basically, the difference between soundproofing versus sound treating has to do with soundproofing is actually blocking out noise from the room, external noises, car noises, plane noises, you know, kids down the street, whatever, because I work out of my house. That is very hard to do as far as like full soundproofing. You can do certain
things. I get the feel.
Yeah. So there is something called mass loaded vinyl, which I've used. I used to have like an actual like built studio box that I used to filter out external noises, because I used to live in a much busier place and I had to filter out those external noise. But mass loaded vinyl is what they use in like, you know, multi-unit buildings to make deaden the noise between the different units. So that you can use that to soundproof, but like these foam things, like, you know, like this, that kind of thing, those are for sound treating. And that's basically to make it so that you do not have an echo coming back at your microphone, because the microphone's extremely sensitive. And so, you know, doing certain things like that, you know, putting a rug, I have this big, huge, fluffy rug on the floor. Because it absorbs noise echo. It absorbs the noise rather than bouncing it back at me. So that sound treating is preventing the bounce back.
So you mentioned some equipments that you use to record voiceover. So we also have creators and podcasters who will be watching this video. For someone who's starting out their content creation journey or, you know, podcasting journey, do you have any suggestion of equipments for them to DIY their setup?
Yeah, absolutely. And so there are some really great USB mics that are out there. When I first started in voiceover, I started with a Blue Yeti. I was with a Blue Yeti, which is a USB microphone that hooked directly into the computer and everything. As a beginning podcaster, you're not doing voiceover, so your requirements for super treated room is not nearly as stringent as mine. But the thing is that having the least amount of things around you that's making noise, like don't have your laptop next to your microphone because it's going to hear it and you're going to hear this noise throughout the whole thing.
Yeah,
exactly. So do that, but use the USB microphone. I actually have a separate space. I have two screens for my computer. I have one screen that I use for the voiceover, and I have another screen for everything else, you know, that I use the computer for. And so in that space, I have a specific keyboard for that space, specific mouse for that space. I have, of course, a pop filter, but that's not for a podcaster. You probably don't really need that too much. But when you hook that up and you do that, if you can get something like this, like these right here, you can find these on Amazon.
Sound absorbers.
Sound absorbers, yes. And so you want to get the good ones like this. Not the cheapy, the cheap foam ones. These are not necessarily that expensive compared to the other foam ones, but these actually have a noise rating to them. You want to buy ones that actually have a noise rating. The rating, it's I think it's called an NRC. I should have looked this up before, but it's called it's a noise rating that you can look up. and it comes like with these, when you see these on Amazon, you're going to see they have a noise rating associated with them. And these are so much better than those other ones. I used to use those other ones, those other cheaper ones. And I was like, gosh, they don't really work that well. But these do. So I would definitely recommend that if you're looking to reduce some of the echo for your podcasting and stuff like that. But I think the biggest thing that I hear, because, you know, I listen to the occasional podcast. The biggest thing that I hear when I'm listening to podcasts, that when they don't know how to edit, when they don't know how to use the software that they're using to record it onto, to edit out background noises, you know, the cat meowing in the background or something like that, or whatever else is going on. It's an editing thing, or maybe the podcast, the volume's too low, because that's a lot of times an issue with these microphones, is that you record and it only pulls in so much of it, and you have to increase it. You have to compress it. Sometimes you have to up the gain, you know, that kind of thing. So when the podcaster doesn't do anything as far as that kind of editing, I can tell. So I think that that's something, if you want to just add on a little bit of extra quality, that helps a lot.
There's one more thing I'd like to ask. Do you think you need to develop a ear to detect these mistakes? Or is it like, when do you know this is something regular people who are tuning into podcasts will not notice, and versus someone who's pro on audio will notice? Like, there are many times I hear reverb in the files, and the client says, oh no, the file looks perfectly fine. We are not able to detect the mistake that you're talking about. So when do you think, do we have like an extra finely tuned ear for such mistakes? Or
Yes, I do.
Hope you get it.
Yes, I do. It's a little, my ear for it is really tight. And so the thing is, I know when I'm being ridiculous about it. And so I know, because I compare it to what I have to do, which is required for that type of stuff. But for podcasters, it's really not that important. But sometimes it can be distracting, you know, for people who like... Something that I've determined here, since I've started working full-time doing voiceover and stuff like that, I'm in a quiet space most of my day. And so that means that I have very little noise filter that's automatically built in. And so when I go and I hear noises, I hear everything now. And so versus somebody who works in an office and always has a bunch of noise going on in the background, right? So it really just depends on your own personal experience of how things are going. Like, so because I work in a quiet space all day, it's my ears are very sensitive to every noise that's out there, even the real high pitched ones. It's my husband thinks I'm crazy sometimes.
Okay. Do you have any suggestions, you know, to treat the reverb or echoes or the outside noise that comes in while these podcasters or content creators are filming their videos or audio?
Yeah, I would just say, you know, more of get stuff like this, get stuff like this and put it around in front of your microphone, like in front of your face over here. But then also pay attention to what's behind you, too. And so like over my windows, I have sound deadening curtains. It doesn't really help that much, but it helps with the reverb. And so it helps a lot with that. I have I have one of those sliding door closets in this room. I covered it with sound deadening fabric, and I have it covered so it doesn't bounce back at me, because it's a bigger room. So it's kind of more complicated versus when I first started, I was in a coat closet. I was in a coat closet because clothes will absorb the noise. And so the smaller the space, the easier to treat.
So Jessica, we were talking about the difference of sound that we hear someone who's working on audio versus someone who's listening to the episode of podcast episode of a voiceover. So there are free software called Audacity, and there are some paid softwares like Adobe Audition Pro Tools, Logic Pro, etc. Do you think there's a difference in the outcome that is come out of this free software versus the paid software?
Yes, 100%. I can hear it. I can hear the difference. It's just a quality of like the texture of the sound, it sounds like, with the multiple frequencies that are actually recorded and everything. Every different software has different capabilities, amazing capabilities. Audacity has its place, and it's pretty great for a free software. Its ability to slow down the voiceover or change the pitch of the voice without corrupting the file is incredible. I still go back and use it just for that. Like, so say for example, I say something into the microphone and it's just a tad too high and it doesn't really match with the sentence, because when I get these revisions, I go in and I re-record and I throw it into the original voice. If it's slightly off, like maybe I spoke just slightly a little too high, that kind of thing, I can go in and I can bring it down just at like 1%, and it'll sound exactly like the rest of it in Audacity. In Audition, I cannot. It completely warps the whole recording. And I had talked to Roy Jochelson, who's the guy who helped train me on Audition. And he was just like, yeah, just use Audacity because it's so much easier. And so he says, use Audacity for any tempo changes. Like, say you need to speed it up or slow it down. You want to make it faster, that kind of thing. Because I tend to speak naturally pretty slow. I'm from the southwestern part of the country. We talk slow down there. And so sometimes, a lot of times, I get people saying, well, can you speak it just a little bit faster? And I'll speed it up by a little bit. Just using, software to do that. Otherwise, if it's, too much, then I have to re-record it, which is fine. But you can tell when something's been recorded in Audition versus Audacity. You can tell. At least I can tell.
So, which do you think should podcasters or content creators prefer?
I would start with Audition. Not Audition, excuse me. I would start with Audacity. Get rolling with it and everything, because I'm a firm believer that if you're going to learn about editing, that one is pretty good with learning how to edit and stuff, learning how to edit things and master files and that kind of stuff. And then when you start really getting into the podcasting and stuff, say you're 30 episodes in, I'm just throwing it out there, 30 episodes in, upgrade to Audition or Pro Tools or whatever is out there, Reaper. That kind of stuff too. So it will be a completely different setup as far as that's concerned. But if you have the funds in front of you, if you have the funds to pay for, $200 a year or something like that for Audition, do it up front, because then you're training yourself in Audition, all up front. You don't have to undo old habits from Audacity like I did, because I started with Audacity, and so I had to completely undo everything. And I think that a blank slate is easier to work with than, erasing the chalkboard and rewriting.
Yes, it was an informative conversation having you. Thank you for your time, Jessica. Hoping to converse with you again.
Yes, definitely. Thank you so much.